This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP Financial Executive Vice President, Money Manager Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our August 4th, 2014 edition of Invest Talk. And for our radio listeners, our those that are listening live, streaming on investtalk.com, and also our podcast listeners as well, we welcome all of you. And you can all call in and ask your question when and wherever you want. And we're here to do the best we can to add to your investing skills and your knowledge base. Answer some questions for you while we're at it. Now, did you see the movie Jerry Maguire? Long time ago it came out, but it had, they talked about showing me the money. That's the popular quote, show me the money. Well, that's the first consideration when you're looking at investing in a particular company. You've heard me say it a thousand times. I'm not interested in unless the company is making money. It's got to be profitable. You might get excited about their business plan, their product, their service, but that's just a story. You just show me the money. So where do you see the money? That's what those financial statements are for. They show you the money. Where is the money going? Where is it flowing? Where is it going and where is it flowing? They show you where the company's money came from, where it went, and where it is now. And if you know that, you have a pretty good idea of how that company operates, how efficient they are with their business, and what their business is going to look like going forward. Because the past operations of a company are a pretty good indicator of what's going to happen going forward, and you always have to think about that. That's the only thing you really think about, is what is going to happen in the future. And looking at the financial statements, that's good. It's a good basis, but you have to project that out to the future and understand where those cash flows are going. But it's important to know where they are now so you can figure out where they're going in the future. Now, a little later this hour, we're going to talk some about how to read financial statements on Invest Talk 101. Now, what do you need to know more about? What do you have on your mind when it comes to money and investing? Our listener line is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, so you can get your question to us. No matter what your money questions are, I want to help you. Let's get to our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.
Hello, Steve and Justin. This is Bobby from Atlanta. Podcast listener, what do you guys think of TriMass or TreeMass? The ticker symbol is T as a Tom, R as a rabbit, S as a Sam. I don't own it, but what do you guys think on the valuation of the stock? Thank you. Bye.
All right, this is TriMass Corporation. They manufacture cargo management products, closure systems, industrial products, trailer equipment, and energy products. They're under the diversified operations category in the software that I'm looking at. And based on that description, that sounds like it's right up their alley, is the diversified operations, because it seems kind of all over the place. But it does look fairly cyclical. 2008, they made 85 cents a share. 2009, profits fell almost 50% down to 44 cents a share. So, and this thing went almost went out of business, went to a dollar. Back 2008-2009. So it's balance sheet. Let's check out where the balance sheet is today to where it was back then, because that's important. You know, when a company has almost gone out of business and now you're many years past that, I want to know if that scared them enough to improve their balance sheet. Because I don't want a company that's massively leveraged. And it looks like this has. Back in 2008, they had a balance sheet leverage of 17 times, meaning they owed 17 times more to their creditors, bondholders, the banks, than they had in assets on their balance sheet. 17 times. Now, for a bank, it's a little high, but it's fairly typical for a bank. Now, today, they brought that down to 2.3. That's their financial leverage. And that's good. That's much, much better. So it makes me say, okay, this is a much safer company than it was back in 2008 and 2009. It has a different dynamic. It's not as leveraged. Its operations are probably more diversified, but they are pretty cyclical still. But what I like about it is when you have a lot of financial leverage, it's usually easy to really ramp up your profits dramatically. And now, and usually when you deleverage, right, going from 17-time leverage down to 2.5 or so, that's usually a drag on earnings, but this has been growing its earnings still pretty nicely since 2009. It's going to make $2.20 a share this year and $2.57 a share next year, according to analysts, but analysts are starting to downgrade those earnings projections, which is a little bit worrisome. It's a $1.4 billion company. Market cap wise, so that's it's a small cap on the small cap side, so it's going to be very volatile. So overall, you know, I think it's okay. It doesn't get me super excited. You know, it is profitable, 20% return on equity, which I like. Like I said, debt is being reduced. What have they done? How do they reduce that debt? That's a big question. It looks like they have issued a decent amount of shares, but nothing too dramatic. So that's good. You know, these are the deep dives that you kind of have to take, especially when a company almost went out of business. You know, and there's a lot of those companies recently, over the past 5 years, that almost went out of business, and they were saved. And why were they saved? Because the Fed started printing more money, and the junk bond market took off, and they could borrow more money suddenly. We're back to 2008, 2009, they couldn't. Default rates were skyrocketing. And as soon as the Fed started printing money, the default rates reversed dramatically. So now the big question is, what happens when the Fed stops printing? So I like that they've reduced a lot of their debt. They still remain profitable, but the chart is not good. Below the 200-day moving average, it's almost at a 52-week low. So the fundamentals, I think, are solid, not great, but solid, and the technicals are poor, I would say. So based on those two analyses, I would stay away from it until the technicals start to improve. Now, when the bottom falls out of your favorite stock price, a stop loss order on file with your broker can help save you some pain. Understanding stop loss orders. That's our main talking point today that I want to get to. Also, want to talk about Berkshire Hathaway's. Berkshire Hathaway's report on Friday, their earnings report. For some reason, they always report on Friday. It's kind of interesting. They had record profits, up 41% in the second quarter. And I want to break down where that profit came from. How did they make so much money? What kind of lessons can you take away from this report? All right, so we're going to talk about that. Then the five worst consumer complaints. How are consumers being duped, scammed, just disappointed overall? And how you can try to avoid these pitfalls? And not just you, but maybe your friends and family as well. You can help steer them clear of some of these issues, because that happens a lot. Think about how many times you've had a friend or a family member say that they're doing this to invest and they're going to make all this money. Well, if you aren't aware of some of the scams that are out there, you know, you're not going to be able to steer them away. And I'm going to talk a little bit about some of those pitfalls coming up later in the hour. And I have one more talking point that I want to get to. But first, I want to touch on today's market. It was a modest up day. There was kind of, and started up this morning. We went into the red earlier this morning, and then just rallied most of the day. The Dow ended up 75 points. You know, nothing spectacular, but a nice little bounce after a very, very bloody end an ugly end to July. July was not a good month on overall for the major indexes. The Russell 2000 was down about 6%. That's a small cap index, and that usually always leads. And so it was not a good month overall for really any markets around the world. You know, even bonds for the month, I believe bonds were still, bonds were, I guess, slightly up. I guess it depends on what you look at. But it was a pretty much flat month for bonds too. So that wasn't really a safe haven. Gold was down a little bit, but that was after a pretty good June. So today you had a slight sell-off in gold, you had a slight sell-off in bonds, and a slight rally in stocks. But overall, it looks to me just like a technical bounce so far. Nothing with a lot of conviction. But we'll see coming up. We're in about three quarters through earnings season. It's been actually pretty good. It's been better than expected from the sales and the earnings side. But you know, as the Fed ends QE, we don't have 3 months left, supposedly. How's that going to affect the overall markets? And so far, July, didn't like it so much. How's August going to fare? Now, this is Invest Talk. Here's something to think about. Emerging markets can have beneficial impacts to your portfolio. They have the potential for high growth rates, diversification, and strong market returns. Do you have questions about emerging markets? Maybe getting into them? They've done well recently. Is this the time to jump on? Maybe there's something else that's on your mind. Let's hear it. Give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk continues. Dividend-focused ETFs. There's a whole list of them, a short list, hand-picked by Steve, to show you a broad mix of dividend-paying stocks and other equities that pay steady dividends. If you're an InvestTalk insider, get yours today by signing up on InvestTalk.com.
Stop-loss orders. Do you know what they are? Do you know what a stop-loss order is? Well, it's when you instruct your broker to sell a stock that you own when the price hits a certain point. And the purpose of a stop-loss order, obviously, is that you want to get out of a stock before it falls any further, before you suffer any more losses. Now, a good example of how investors use stop-loss orders was on the stock Merck. You know, this is typical for a drug company to have a lot of volatility, especially a company that's is engaged in a lot of R&D, and they have a lot of money tied into the success of upcoming blockbuster drugs. And they had a drug called Vioxx, and it was taken off the market because studies linked the usage of the popular drug to an increased likelihood of heart attacks and stroke. Now, as soon as Merck made the announcement, stock began to drop like a rock because investors knew how much the company was counting on the profits from that one particular drug. And the stock tanked pretty quickly. Stock opened around $45 the day of the announcement, and it closed down over $11. $11. It was down about $34 a share, wiping out billions and billions of dollars of value for the company and for shareholders. But if you had a stop loss order, say around maybe $40, you would have only lost, you know, 10, 11% or so, instead of 27% on that day. So it's a tool that you can use to avoid drastic moves in a stock and to get out. Now, you want to be careful. You don't want to set that stop order, that price, too close to where it normally fluctuates. You want to do it at some sort of breakdown level. All right. But it's something that everybody should look at if they're, you know, go on vacation or they're just worried about the market. They can't watch the market on a consistent basis. Now, why not try our premium newsletter for a month? It's under $10 a month, and there's no long-term contract. To sign up, just go to investtalk.com. Give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
What makes our podcast somewhat unique is that you can talk to our host directly. Ask your question, make a comment that you think others might need to hear. Just call our 24-hour listener line, and if you call between 4 and 5 p.m. Pacific time, then you can help shape the discussion. That's 888-99-CHART. And please be in touch, and thanks for subscribing to our podcast. Invest Talk continues on this Monday. Asset allocation, new investor's best friend. Don't miss that topic on the next Invest Talk. What's your question? Call in and ask it right now at 888-99-CHART.
Now let's catch up on our 24-hour listener line. Here's a call that came in between programs at 888-99-CHART. Dave called from Laguna Niguel.
First of all, I want to thank you for the information you put out on the air. It's really appreciated by a lot of people, especially myself. Appreciate the open and honest information. My question today is about 401 catch-up contributions. I turned 50 this year, and I'm excited about contributing more money. My question is, my company offers a catch-up plan, but can I do it outside of my company plan pre-tax? Appreciate it if you give me some insight to this. Thanks.
You do it outside of your company plan pre-tax. Yeah, you can put it into an IRA. And I know there is a dollar or an age where you can put in, I think it's $5,000 before, certainly. I think it's $55 is a catch-up. You have to look into it. I can look into it for you if you just shoot me an email on investtalk.com. But yes, there is a way you can do it outside of your employee. It's through an IRA, and there is an additional catch-up number. I'm not sure what it is off the top of my head. You know, it's been a while. They change. They change every year, or not every year, but most years they change. So I haven't looked at it in a while, but there is a way, and it's through an IRA. All right? Let's talk about the earnings report from Berkshire Hathaway. And they released earnings on Friday, and they reported a 41% increase in earnings to $6.4 billion for the quarter. And they filed 10Q and all the necessary disclosures for their earnings statement. And the big question is, how did they make so much money? And what are the lessons you can glean from them? First off, number one is that Warren Buffett's, or at least Berkshire Hathaway's holdings, are very concentrated, especially on the stock side when they own stocks of companies. Berkshire's top four holdings account for 58% of his equity investments. If you include his $10.5 billion of Bank of America options, it brings the top five holdings to over 60% of his book. So he's very, very focused. Now, the total equity basket has a market value of $119 billion. And his largest position, as of the end of June, remember this is the second quarter, so the end of June, June 30th, it was Wells Fargo. I think if you're going to invest in a bank, definitely Wells Fargo is the one you want to be invested in. Another thing you have to remember, too, with this is the end of June. So all the stocks that he's owned, remember, if they gone up during that quarter, which the second quarter was a good quarter for the markets, that's a gain to Berkshire Hathaway. And if you look at Wells Fargo, it started the quarter at about just shy of $50 a share, and it ended the quarter at about $53 a share. So decent gain for the quarter. His second highest was Coca-Cola. And that started the quarter at about $39 a share, ended the quarter at a little over $42 a share. But so far in July, it reversed almost all those gains. And then at the end of day Friday, it had closed back down around that $39 level. So all those gains are going to be erased this quarter, obviously, if it stays around this area. Third was American Express. What did American Express do for the quarter? It started around $91 a share, end of the quarter around $95 a share. But it's reversed all of that in July, and it's even lower. It's trading at the close today at around $87 a share. So there's American Express. And then you have IBM as the fourth largest holding. That didn't not have a great first quarter, or second quarter. It was down, and it's actually a little bit higher than it closed at the end of the second quarter. So that's their top four holdings. It's Berkshire's top four holdings. And then you have Bank of America as well. So what you see is very concentrated, and most of the stocks that he owns, the big holdings, those did pretty well in the second quarter. But remember, the stock market goes down, those losses start to hit his books as well. And then number two, what's the second takeaway? Well, most of the earnings increase was in the form of investment gains, like I said. Largely from the cashing out of when Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos bought the Washington Post. Now, Berkshire owned a lot of shares of the Washington Post, and it has for a long, long time. In fact, Benjamin Graham purchased it in the 70s. In the 70s for Berkshire Hathaway, and they booked a hundredfold gain since the 70s. On the purchase from Jeff Bezos of the Washington Post. And they did a stock-for-stock transaction, which allowed them to avoid paying any taxes. Now, there are a couple more takeaways that I'm going to get to after the break. Actually, let me get to them. Number three was they have huge cash flows from insurance operations. Huge cash flows. And, you know, insurance to Berkshire Hathaway is like search to Google, and like Windows to Microsoft. It is essential to their earnings, and it is very, very important. Basically, he's made a lot of decisions betting against Armageddon for the economy. He always says, be greedy when others are fearful, and fearful when others are greedy. What are we now? Steve's individual reviews give our listeners a chance to get a free review of their current retirement portfolios. Go to investtalk.com and sign up, and you can get reviewed today.
You're listening to Invest Talk. Good asset allocation can lessen risk because when stocks rise, for example, bonds often fall. At a time when the stock market begins to fall, real estate may begin generating above average returns. Do you have questions about the ups and downs of investing? Call in 888-99-CHART and ask about it on InvestTalk.
Don't hesitate to call us with your question or share your investing experience. Tell us about the mix in your portfolio, the stocks and bonds that you're looking to buy or sell, or mutual funds. 888-99-CHART is how to reach us anytime.
Hi, Jason. This is Joseph from Bavaria, and I have one question for you that is regarding about Yahoo. I'm considering for a long term to purchase. What is your opinion about Yahoo for a year or two? All right. Thank you, sir. Bye.
Yahoo. Everyone knows who Yahoo about Yahoo. Now, they've had a new CEO, Meg. It's not Meg Whitman. I can't remember the name off the top of my head. I don't know why. I know there's been a new CEO. That's it, Marissa Mayer. That's what it is. Marissa Mayer. She's done a lot. She's transformed the company in some pretty, I would say, dramatic ways. The big question is, how is that going to turn into major profits? Is that major change going to sustain the company for years to come financially? And, you know, is she the right person to turn the business around? Because it had been suffering for a while. Now, it's, you know, profitability has improved, but analysts are expecting profits to fall 7% this year, 7% next year. Revenues are falling 4% last quarter. Earnings were up 6%. It's kind of all over the place. I think it's kind of expensive. Now, technically, on a chart basis, it looks like it's found some support, and it looks like it's trying to maybe break out again. So technically, I don't hate it. I think it looks decent, but fundamentally, I'm just not convinced. I think it's a great story. I think Marissa Meyer is very smart. I don't really have any problems with her, but it's just hard to compete against Google. You're trying to beat Google. They have a lock. 80% of the search market is Google, and you're trying to beat that. And at least she's trying to diversify her business into other areas of the internet, and she's doing a relatively good job. But is this going to move the needle on their growth dramatically long term? So far, it hasn't, and that's what makes me say, I'm kind of ho-hum on Yahoo. I really am not a huge fan of it. Technically, it looks decent, but fundamentally, you know, it still has a lot of work to do. Let's go to Doug in San Diego. How you doing, Doug?
Good. How are you doing today?
Great. What can I do for you?
Well, kind of have a two-sided question on strategy. Mm-hmm. And I believe it was you that said that you had a relative that was a little older. Mm-hmm. That beginning of the year, you would maybe help move to cash. And mm-hmm. I'm actually managing my mother's portfolio, and we took her investments and put them in cash kind of simultaneously with that. Mm-hmm. And but at some point, she's going to need to get a return. Mm-hmm. And so that's the first one is, how do you determine when it's time to, you know, put a little bit of that back into the market for longer-term investment, and then what do you do for the shorter and middle-term money? And then the second part of the equation would be my own portfolio, which I've pulled back to 40%. Mm-hmm. And when do you determine that it's a good time to start putting that money back to work? Do you dollar cost average back in? Do you wait till you feel that, you know, some of the turmoil is out of the market? What are your views on some of those thoughts?
Well, you know, getting back in is, you know, during a bearish pulse in the market is hard. It's difficult to find that right time. You know, what are the rules and the parameters around that? Those are difficult to say. It's such a dynamic. The markets are so dynamic, and you can't really say it's just one thing. It's, you know, we use multiple factors to figure out how to determine whether the market is attractive or not. And right now, all of our factors are, I won't say all, but the vast majority of our factors are lining up saying this is not an attractive time. And you have to go back to the fundamentals and long-term valuations and say, okay, where is an attractive level for the overall markets? Now, I think on the S&P, if we get down below 1,500 on the S&P, which I think is entirely possible, I would start to think about it. That's when I would start to say, okay, we're starting to get into that zone. Now, could it go down to 1,300 in the S&P? Could it go down to 12? Could it get back into the triple digits below 1,000? Sure, it just depends on, you know, how the financial system handles, you know, less QE and, you know, potential, you know, junk bond market blow up, things like that, that are potentially down the road. Not saying they're going to happen, but those are potentially things that could happen. So, you know, like I said, when you get below 1,500, that's when you start thinking about it. A lot of it, too, is sentiment. When you go look at, you know, the media, you look at websites, all they're talking about is how bad things are, and everyone's bearish, then you want to say, okay, this is a hard time where I put some money back to work, and you look for those great long-term plays those companies that will survive no matter what, because they have great products, they have great service, they have great leadership, and you avoid the names that are, you know, will eventually go out of business or be their market share will be taken by better run companies. And so that's, you know, that's what we do today, is we're focused more on building our watch list, building a list of the companies we want to own when valuations are attractive again. And so, you know, it's hard to say there's one hard, fast rule you can use to say, okay, now I get back in the market, because there really isn't. But it's a combination of factors, and that's why, you know, you got to study and learn and take notes and work at it.
Sure. And do you feel that this is the beginning of a correction, or do you think that over the next year, two, or three, things may be a little more bearish, and I'm in no hurry to get back in, but, you know, I do want to have a little strategy when it looks like the time is right.
Yeah, well, I do think there will be some opportunities very latter part of the year. You know, how much of next year? Next year will likely be an up year. I believe that. I think this year will end down. I'll say that on the major indexes. You know, I think it's going to be a tough slog to figure out, you know, what is the Fed going to do? Is the Fed going to go back to printing money if things start to fall apart without QE? You know, that's
sure.
that's you know, it's one of those things that you can't sit there and say, oh, well, you know, this year's going to do this, and this is how you trade in and out. To me, it's all about what is the long-term perspective? What's the long-term valuation? Is this attractive at the current time? And it's not an attractive time to be in the marketplace, but I guarantee in the next few years, whether it's 3-4 months from now or 3-4 years from now, there will be a very attractive time to be in the marketplace, and that's when you want to start, you know, adding those long-term holdings.
And with the little bit of 40% that I've got left, would you raise even a little more cash on some of the up days and weeks?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on, you know, your risk tolerance. If you're okay with that type of volatility, you know, say we go down 30-40% from here, which is, like I said, it's possible. Not predicting it, but
sure.
It's possible. You know, if you're okay, if, you know, 40% of your portfolio doing that, then, you know, you can hold on for the long term as long as those are great holdings. But, you know, if you can't, then, yeah, you start taking some more of that money off the table.
All right. Well, I certainly appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Doug. Let's go to Joe in L.A. How you doing, Joe?
Hey, thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I have a quick question. I got stopped out of this stock. It's called Grifols, E-R-F-S.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to know if this is a good point to re-enter this particular based on the fundamentals.
Uh-huh. Well, this is a Spanish company, and that's one of the main reasons why it's taking a hit, because what's going on in Portugal, and that's obviously very tied to Spain. You know, Portugal's very tied to Spain, and that's why those markets have been hit so hard, and that's one of the reasons why this stock has been hit so hard. So the question you have to ask yourself, and this goes back to understanding the global dynamics, globalization, the fact that we're in a global marketplace, and when you're investing in a company that is domiciled in a different country, there are different types of risks that you have to be aware of. And this is a perfect example, because this stock closed early part of June around $46 a share, and now it's down about $37 a share. So that's it's almost a 20% drop in the stock in a less than 2 months. And you have to say, are the problems in Argentina or in Portugal and in Europe, are they going to get worse or better? Now, they've gotten a lot better in the past 2 or 3 years, and things are, you know, as the Fed's stopping its QE program, you're starting to see Europe fall apart a little bit. Is that going to get better or is that going to get worse, Joe?
Well, I don't know. You know, I'd like to know
I don't think it's going to get better in the short term. So I think this will probably go down more. So I don't think this is the time to get in. I think it's probably going to go down more. It's probably a solid company, and it looks like it has decent numbers and, you know, decent growth, and it's a drug company, and there's probably a lot of some good stories behind it. But if Spain and Portugal have issues along with the rest of Europe, and, you know, they have a deflation problem, and there's a lot of issues. And I think they're not going to get better as the Fed prints less money. So I would say this is only going to get worse. Keep it on your watch list. Wait till things get bad over in Europe. And then you pick this up. And that'll be a good value. But not yet.
Sounds great. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Joe. Let's go to John in San Francisco. How you doing, John?
Hey, Justin. How you doing?
Great.
So, I'm trying to see if I could buy GE here.
Mm-hmm.
It's gone down quite a bit from 28 when it hit back in January.
Yeah.
But it's down like 9, 10, 11% right now. And it pays a pretty good dividend, too. What do you think of that stock?
Well, I think it's all going to come down to, you know, the economy as a whole. I think GE is a pretty good company. I think they've done a good job of reorganizing their business away from GE Capital. You know, before the financial crisis, a lot of their revenue growth, a lot of their earnings growth was derived from GE Capital, and it was about 40% of their business at that time. And they've started a plan to reduce that. I think it was down to 25 or 20%
of
their business.
Yeah, I think they spun off a bank or something like that.
Yeah, they've been spinning off some, you know, financial assets to try to reduce the size of GE Capital. So, yeah, they've been doing that. But, you know, their earnings growth has still been pretty anemic. Back in 2007, they made $2.20 a share, and they took a big hit down to $1.18 in 2009. But they haven't even gotten close to the $2.20 level yet. They're at $1.68 this year, so they have to do $1.83 next year. You know, I'm not a fan of GE here. I think it's a good company, always a good company to have on your watch list. We had it for our clients about a year. We sold it about a year ago, I want to say. And we're staying out. I don't think it's a good value at this point. There's technically it's poor. I think its revenue and earnings growth are pretty anemic. And I don't want to pay high teens for that. I want to see GE's PE back in the low teens to high single digits. And then, okay, I would like it. But at this level, I think it's still overvalued. Technicals are poor. And I would stay away from it, but I would keep it on my watch list.
All right. Thank you.
No problem, John. Let's go to Anthony in Fremont. How are you doing, Anthony?
Hi. How are you?
Doing well.
So I had a question on Yum, mm-hmm. Y-U-M. I kind of started looking at the stock, especially with the food issues out in China. It's around, I think, $70 or something. And I just wanted to see what you think, what the chart says to you, and to see if this is a good buying opportunity.
Well, it has had a nice decline from about $83 and change middle of July, and now, like you said, we're at about $70.18 at the close today. So that's a pretty big drop, and it's natural for anybody who's – I'm assuming this has just been on your watch list for a while?
Yeah, you know, I owned it back, gosh, back when it was like 2002, mm-hmm. and, I kind of sold it and all that, but for quite a long time I've been kind of tracking it and trying to see if it was worth getting back in. It pays a little bit of a dividend, doesn't it?
About 2.1% now in this decline. So that's, you know, it's a decent dividend.
Yeah.
I would say, you know, it is at a lot of support here, and it's found some support, but it's not rebounding with gusto. So that worries me a little bit. I would say, you know, if it breaks below about the 66 level, this could go much, much lower. Now, you know, like I said, it's at support. Fundamentally, earnings must go 21% this year, 15% next year. You have a P of 21, which is kind of on the higher side of its P range from the last 5 years, 14 to 26, so it's in the middle. Revenue growth is starting to pick up again. Earnings growth is starting to pick up again. But analysts are starting to downgrade their projections. And, you know, what happens in China, there's a lot of risk there with their housing sector, and it's starting to weaken a lot, and how bad is it going to get over there with that, and that could affect Yum Brands dramatically as well. And even if, you know, their sales don't dip too much, you know, it's a perception. So I would probably stay away from Yum Brands. I do think that it is near support, so it could hang around this for a little while, but I would stay away from it because I think it's overvalued slightly, and I think there's a lot of risk in China.
Thanks, Anthony. And a good buy-in point would be, what, like mid-60s?
Oh, no, much lower than that. Much lower. I'm talking high 40s.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, hey, thank you so much. Appreciate
Thanks for calling. If you have a money question on your mind, give us a call at 888-99-CHART.
Thanks for being a podcast subscriber. And even though you listen after our daily production time, you can still be part of the discussion. Your questions and comments set the tone and the topics. So please participate. Just call 888-99-CHART anytime. And if you'd like to talk live to Steve and Justin, just make that call between 4 and 5 p.m. Pacific time.
This is InvestTalk, a one-hour conversation about your money. Do you understand how to use the P/E ratio to judge the value of a stock? Talk about it as we move into the final segment of the day. 888-99-CHART is how to reach through to InvestTalk.
Our podcast listeners from all over the world download our program each and every weekday. And if you'd like to join them, you can subscribe for free on iTunes. And if you have a question for us, you can always ask it at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, my name is Matt. I listen to you guys on Stitcher Radio out in Chicago. I had a question about how you go about evaluating a company. And I was wondering, when people call in and ask you about certain companies and you come up with a number for valuation, have you already done previous research on all these companies, or do you have a particular piece of software or how you go about creating valuations so quickly? Do you have a piece of software that gives sort of a rough estimate, or how you go about doing that? Thanks. Bye.
We do have a piece of software that does give us a pretty good estimate, you know, based on cash flows and earnings and profitability and things like that. You know, I always warn people, everyone wants to find the holy grail to valuing a company. And I think people are overestimate the usability of valuation numbers, especially in the short to medium term. You know, long-term valuations are what they are. They're long-term. But most people don't hold or understand it long enough to hold long-term. You know, if the market goes down, you have 2008, you think all those companies that got dumped back in 2008, 2009, you think the people that were selling them even understood what the long-term value of that company was? For the most part, probably not. They just wanted out. They were scared. You know, emotions are far more important in the short and medium term for the market. Cash flows that are coming into equities and financial markets, those are more important. And those will, those factors will move your stock far more in the short to medium term than it will in the long term. In the long term, yes, valuations are what really matters. Valuations are what you need to focus on. So, you know, it depends on what type of investor. Are you a buy and hold investor? And if the market goes down 50% and your portfolio goes down 50%, can you handle that? If the answer is yes, and for the vast majority of people, I guarantee you can't, then valuation, you know, that's what's the only thing you really need to focus on. But for the rest of you who are emotional, and, you know, it's natural. It's human nature to be emotional. We're emotional beings. You have to understand the various factors that move the markets, move the economy, move financial assets. Okay? So, you know, don't get too obsessed over valuation. It's important. You should always know it. You should always have a method to come up with a valuation for a particular stock that you are buying or owning. Know whether it's over or undervalued. It gives you a nice starting point of whether you should own that stock or maybe take profits or, you know, sell the whole thing, buy more maybe. But it's not the holy grail. There's a lot, you know, technical factors matter. If you're, you know, you want to avoid big losses. If you want to catch the next big wave, because you could invest in a stock that's grossly undervalued, but if the market doesn't realize it or and isn't going to realize it for a while because they're focused on, you know, maybe another sector of the economy that's hot, I mean, that stock could languish for months and years, and you could have been right. And you'll probably sell it before it gets to that value because you're getting impatient. You want to chase the next big thing. Chase what's hot. And I try to caution people not to do that. know, it's what most people do, and it's what people chase after, but it's not the way to invest. Right? Now, before we close for the day, one of the most popular Invest Talk Insider info sheets is Dividend Focused ETF. It's a list of dividend focused ETFs. Short list of ETFs that hold a broad mix of dividend paying stocks or other equities that pay steady dividends. And if you want to get that, just become an Invest Talk Insider. You'll get access to that dividend focused ETF list. Thanks for listening today. I'm Portfolio Manager Justin Klein on behalf of Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP Financial. We hope you'll join us again on the next Invest Talk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.